My name is Michael Salon. I am the music director of the Oratorio Society of Virginia and the director of choral music and a conductor at the University of Virginia.
Well, thanks for taking the time to talk with us today. We sure appreciate it.
Kevin, it's always a pleasure to be on the air with you.
Now, listen, before we get started, what is going on? Here we've got a requiem coming up pretty soon.
That's correct. So the Oratorio Society of Virginia are a large community chorus here in the Charlottesville, Central Virginia area, is going to be performing the Brahms Requiem on May 11th at Old Cabell Hall. And of course, as you well know, it's one of those most beloved and celebrated choral orchestral works.
Tell us about yourself. I mean, just in general, how'd you wind up in Charlottesville? What was your first interest in music? Let's start there.
Well, of course, I'm in Charlottesville because that's how it goes in academia. You win a national search. So I was blessed to win a search here at the University of Virginia. And that
really
brought me to Central Virginia. Yeah, that's how it is for most of these faculty positions. I'm originally from Buffalo, New York, actually.
Huh.
And of course, you guys have Joanne Follett and the Buffalo Philharmonic sometimes on performance today, I know.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I got interested in choral music. I was blessed to have a very talented high school director. And in addition to having me sing in the choir, he immediately, when I was a freshman, I guess at 13, started having me accompany. And that was kind of a heady experience because we would be pretty big audiences for those concerts. So it was a good formative experience as a performer. And then gratefully, also, I had a chance to do some conducting in high school, which is, as you know, it's a little bit unusual. People usually come to conducting a little bit later in life,
right?
Having started on a different, on an instrument or voice prior to that. And then I went to Cornell, kept active in choral music, and as we may have talked about last time, I can't remember, but I became the assistant conductor there after graduating. Worked with the choral groups, the Glee Club, and the chorus there. And then from there, went on to the Indiana University School of Music, of course, one of America's largest schools of music. Extremely formative experience. And that's where I had a chance not only to continue to work in choral conducting, but I did I was also in the instrumental conducting class and did a lot with opera. So that was a chance to really kind of not only put down roots, but to spread one's kind of branches as a conductor. And after 5 years in Bloomington, then 1 year on visiting conducting faculty at the Oberlin Conservatory, that was a sabbatical replacement position. And then from there, got the position here at University of Virginia.
Certainly sounds like you earned your chops.
It takes a while to make a musician, yeah.
Now, we've got this Brahms piece, this Brahms Requiem, and I know a lot of listeners, when they hear Requiem, I think possibly in part thanks to the film Amadeus, they think, oh, of course, Mozart's Requiem. But there's plenty of Requiems out there, the Brahms Requiem, what does the Brahms Requiem say to you when you hear it or when you conduct it?
That's an interesting question. And of course, you mentioned Mozart, and there are a number of very famous Requiems, right? We think of Mozart, you think of Verdi, mm-hmm. Berlioz, and then the French ones, Fauré and Durufle. And the Brahms is different than some of those, obviously, because he chose not to set the traditional Latin Requiem text, but instead created this decidedly personal work in which he set biblical passages of his own choosing. And Brahms used to, we think, carry the New Testament around with him, and regardless of his level of belief, it was important to him. And so he assembles this very personal set of scriptural passages that he sets in the Requiem instead of using those kind of dramatic, romantic dies irae effects. And I think in his mind, it was a piece that was intended as much for the living as it was for the souls of the departed, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And it talks about that, comforting the mourner, and they that sow in sadness will reap in joy, will harvest in joy. So there's that aspect that runs throughout. In addition, some of the listeners, of course, know that the full title is Ein Deutsches Requiem, a German Requiem, but he said he would be happy to replace the word German with the word human. And I think that shows something about how he thinks of the text and the spirit of the work.
Most Requiems follow the Mass, don't they? But Brahms, you're saying, took out his personal favorite scripture parts and incorporated them?
Right, correct. So he doesn't in any place use the traditional Latin Requiem text, unlike so many of the other composers in the 19th century. And he instead uses scripture passages that are entirely in German. And so, yeah, it takes on a much more personal flavor in that respect.
There's a date kind of floating around in my head here. When was, you said, the first performance?
Yeah, so the Brahms, so it's interesting, this piece evolved over several years, and the first performance was 1868 in a six-movement version, but then he added one more movement, and that's how we know the piece, seven movements. That was first performed in 1869, so believe it or not, it occurs to me, it's this year is 150 years ago. From the first performance of the full Brahms Requiem. So it's nice to think of that and think back historically to that occasion.
So the performance is tomorrow at 7:30 p.m. Have you had any rehearsals in Cabell Hall yet? Have you got any idea for the feel?
Well, you know, I had a chance to conduct the Brahms Requiem in Old Cabell Hall in 2000 with the University Singers. An orchestra. So I've certainly done it in there. And I think the Oratorio Society and the orchestra they performed in there often. So they'll have a good feel for the acoustic. But of course, there's always still some tweaking of balances and so on to work on. But that'll be a joy. It's usually a joy to perform these kind of works in that hall.
Now, you were talking about you conducted that in 2000, but I also, a little bird told me that you sang the Brahms with Robert Shaw in the 90s. Is this correct?
That is correct. So one of the last years he was actually alive, 1997, I was involved with the May Festival in Cincinnati, a huge choral festival out there. And so he came to conduct the Brahms with the May Festival Chorus and the Cincinnati Symphony. And so I was blessed to have a chance to sing it with him, Kevin. And I have to say it was a transformative experience, as you can imagine. I mean, obviously one of the great conductors and choral conductors of the 20th century. Someone who really kind of, I think in some ways, established some of the standards for great choral singing in this country. And he had a very particularly marked up score. You know, he would give that to all the singers. And that was, of course, his style, his way. And so you learn a lot from watching him rehearse it, what you can see in the markings, what he's thinking about, and then, of course, his added personality in the room. We were together for a whole week, actually, rehearsals, which was kind of a special thing. And, you know, I was thinking about this. The end of the Requiem of the Brahms has this beautiful text. It says, you know, this line, "Denn ihre Werke folgen ihnen nach," their work shall follow after, meaning, blessed are they who die in the Lord. The Spirit says that they may rest from their labor and their works follow after them. And just as kind of a small testament to that, in this performance, we're going to be using many of Robert Shaw's markings in our performance. And so it's just a small testament to the way in which a person's works do follow after them.
Okay, now to someone who might not be aware, when you say Robert Shaw's markings, what specifically are you referring to?
Sure. So in his score, he makes some edits. He'll add some dynamic emendations to the score, and he'll add a few crescendos and decrescendos to create a little more motion in the vocal line. When he feels like a particular vocal line, let's say it's in a fugue where the idea is you want to have the theme more prominent than other parts, for example, if he feels like that part is in a register not as expressive or loud volume-wise for that part, he'll figure out a way to double some singers from other sections onto that part. And so we do a couple doublings like that, which is, of course, it's a standard choral conductor trick, but it's nice to see him where he wrote this out and where he kind of hopes that by adding some singers here or there, you can get certain lines in the music to come out more prominently. Like if you think of like a painting, foreground versus background, rather than having everything be like a foreground.
Wow, so it's almost like Robert Shaw's going to be a guest at the performance.
Well, in a way, I hope his spirit will be, yeah, exactly. And he, you know, he loved this piece deeply and, of course, recorded it with Atlanta and conducted it many times in his life. In fact, I remember a story that when we did it with him in 97 that he had spent on the day of the performance like 3 hours studying the score, which just tells you, I mean, here's a person who's conducted it dozens and dozens of times, and they're still spending hours trying to find more out about the treasures that are in there. That's a special tribute to, you know, what a conductor does and what his work ethic and dedication to the music were as a conductor.
3 hours before the performance.
that was the story. Yeah, I know. I can't verify firsthand, but I heard it from a good source. So.
Well, I certainly wouldn't doubt it. Now, also, yeah. Is there a Hail Stork reprise? That's
Yes. So you'll remember last year, as part of the Oratory Society's 50th anniversary, we had a special commission that we worked on, and we were able to get someone who gratefully is a friend of mine, I could say, Rita Dove, our wonderful poet at the University of Virginia and former U.S. Poet Laureate, a Pulitzer Prize winner. She's written this incredible poem, Testimonial, which if you come to Charlottesville, it's inscribed in a huge mural on the side of a hotel right here in the corner area near the university. The poem Testimonial has this line, "The world called and I answered," which is way up high on the mural. And so we commissioned Adelphus Hail Stork, very distinguished composer who lives in Virginia. He's on faculty at Old Dominion, but he's had, of course, premieres and commissions all around the country. And so he set this, "The world called for chorus, orchestra, and soprano." And we did it last year. And I thought, you know, sometimes with new pieces, it's not hard to get the first performance. It's hard to get the second performance. By reprising the work, I feel like we can expose more listeners to it and give it more airtime and also get some more recording of it. And I think that'll be good so that the piece from there can then go out into the world.
Can you tell us a little bit about the performers? Are they students? Are they members of the community? Are these paid musicians?
Right. So the Oratorio Society is the longstanding, now more than 50 years, community chorus, right? If you think of a larger city, like a symphony chorus type organization in the community, fully auditioned. And we have mainly, I would say, community members in there. We certainly do have a few UVA students and a number of alumni who had sung with me here at UVA and now are in the community. But it's mainly a group, a cross-section of our community. People, all kinds of fascinating people. Some of them musicians. Some of them are all other walks of life, you know, doctors and astronomers and nurses and moms and dads and teachers, you know, the list goes on and on, faculty. And so it's a fascinating collection of people who all share in common this love of music, of singing, and a desire to, you know, to commit themselves to a high level of musical excellence. So that's something about the membership of the Oratory Society. And then we partner with an entirely professional orchestra hired for these occasions, and also professional soloists. We'll have a wonderful soprano, Christina Peer, joining us. She was here last year to give the world premiere of the Hail Stork. She'll sing the Hail Stork and the Brahms. And also baritone Trevor Schunemann, and he, I think, is known somewhat to local audiences because he was here with Charlottesville Opera as recently as last summer.
Okay, so to quickly recap, this performance at Cava Hall of the Brahms Requiem is going to be when and where?
It's May 11th, I believe it's 7:30 p.m. At Old Cava Hall. And because it's at Old Cava, I think tickets are always available, you know, through the arts box office at UVA online and by telephone. But yeah, it's May 11th. And we look forward to having as many people as possible from your listener area here to join us for this extraordinary music.
Are there any special instructions when you're, because I used to work at a university in a former life, and are there any special instructions to people when they come in? Like, do they need to get passes to get into the parking areas, or how does that work?
That's a great question. Or I would say check our website for information. You know how it is. Parking around universities can sometimes be tricky. There are a few different parking lots available for this kind of concert. So I think the website should hopefully have clear instructions on that rather than having me go into. I mean, it could be more complicated than a fugue if I try to do it on the air. But I think it won't be that hard, actually, once it's laid out. It's a really wonderful chance to hear this piece with full orchestra, with the solos, with the wonderful society. You know, somewhat off the topic of your parking question, but you know, we all watched recently, Kevin, the sad fire at Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. And we had rehearsal that night. And I don't know why. I think there was a thing that people were very moved about around the world, and maybe surprisingly so to themselves. You know, why is it so emotional, our reaction to this? But, I think I said to the choir, it's almost as if you're watching like all the scores of Beethoven 9 that existed being burned, you know, something that's a representation of human creativity being in some way lost, although fortunately they were able to save many things about it. And that brings home the moment of not only the loss that's discussed in a requiem, which we're singing about, and so it motivates the emotion in a piece like this, but it also reminds us of these treasures we have, be they churches or works of art, that they're entrusted to us, and we need to continue to care for them as best we can as part of our, you know, human creative joy.
That is interesting because I have seen so many reactions from so many different people, and it's not. It goes beyond religion. You see Catholics, not just them being hurt. You see Muslims. You see any denomination, and they all feel the loss, and they all feel the damage.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So there's something deep going on there, and I think it sometimes that those experiences can be expressed in music.
Yeah, you know, normally in this business, we already have our music all planned out and ready to go. So we had to make some changes that afternoon.
That afternoon, very interestingly, I think the broadcast feed changed from regular programming and started to broadcast music that was related to Notre Dame or had been recorded there. And it was a very special testament.
And if a listener wants to get some more information about the Oratorio Society of Virginia, where would they go look for it?
Yeah, definitely. We'd just go to oratoriosociety.org, www.oratoriosociety.org. And I think that has all the information. And then, as I also mentioned, the Arts Box Office at Virginia, UVA, will have the tickets actually for sale. So either of those sites should be helpful. A bit more information about this performance and about the group and other upcoming performances and projects.
Well, Michael Slaan, director of the Oratorio Society of Virginia and conductor and director of choral music at the University of Virginia, thanks for stopping by.
Kevin, thanks so much for having me on the program.